I'll start with a topic we discussed last week, which was the topic of tinnitus, the sound in the ear. And this started because of a question on our discussion list, and we were talking about how actually no sound is heard, it's just thinking about sound like in a dream. And at the time you also made a comment that this is the nimitta for those who have wrong practice. They see whatever they think is real and they hear whatever they think is there. Would you say more about it as the nimitta for those who have wrong practice?
Usually it's wrong thinking.
In what way?
Fantasy.
Fantasy. And when you say it's for those who have wrong practice, you mean those who have a wrong practice of developing understanding?
Mm-hmm.
And what about those who have no interest in Buddhism, say, who also have tinnitus? Any wrong practice there?
Illusion, delusion, illusion, hallucination.
Hallucination. Yeah. So it's, in any case, it's always following a fantasy of what they think is real, thinking about what they think is real. So it's always like a kind, always like a wrong practice.
Hearing problems. Tinnitus is a real thing. It's not an imagination. It happens. It's a sound that one hears in the ear that is produced.
I think that it's not right talk about a disease or any problem of the body. We're talking about the fantasy idea of hearing something which is...
Okay, right. Yeah. That's another story, a hallucination
story,
like in a sound.
Yeah.
But tinnitus is a real thing. It doesn't... there is a sound. There is sound. And it's not sound that comes from outside. It's not sound that we think of normally in terms of a rupa from outside. But rather, it is a sound that it's a conventional mm-hmm. thing for the sound that one hears in the ear due to the what are the makeup of whatever is in the ear. So it's a
until it's cured or healed.
That's right. So, because I know I get it from time to time,
mm-hmm.
and it's nothing. There is a sound. It's not imagined
mm-hmm.
Because of something of the makeup of the rupa in the
yeah.
ear, whatever it is. That sound does occur.
Normal
but,
for those who have such disease, or we can say.
Mm-hmm. But for others, where we hear an imaginary sound, that's another story.
Mm-hmm. According to what you understand, tinnitus is some condition which involves certain rupas producing sound?
That's right.
Because you see that the impact of the rupa can condition sound.
So, Betty, can that sound in the ear be picked up by the doctor using a stethoscope or microphone?
Might, if it's occurring right at the time that he's listening.
Well, obviously.
Right, I'm not sure.
Well, if it was real sound,
it probably could be picked up by a machine, if it's occurring right there when the machine is hooked up. But I'm,
right,
for instance,
sure,
you
then.
Go to an audiologist.
Yeah.
And they can pick that up when you have tinnitus. Tinnitus is a real thing. It's
but
not.
Measured,
yes,
been,
it can. I think it can be measured on a machine.
But according to,
I'm not an ear doctor. So
if you look at most definitions of it, it is not a real sound that is heard.
When it's hearing, it has to be a real sound.
If it's not hearing, then there's no sound.
When it's hearing, it's, yeah,
it's. I would have to look it up, but it really is, it's caused by something in the ear,
yeah.
You know, the rupa in the
and
ear.
And what
happens.
About someone hears something which is not usual or normal? It is sound when it's hearing anywhere.
I think that's
so what one can say is if there is, if it's a real sound, it's hearing, but if there's no real sound, then it is imagined. And last time you were saying that actually when we were talking about this topic, you were saying it was imagined that there was no
when it's sound. Not real sound.
And right, it's not
hearing. Yeah.
And in this case, when, let's say, it's imagined, it's not real sound, and when you're saying it's the nimitta for those who have wrong practice because there's the following of that imaginary sound or the concentrating on it. And our friend on the discussion list, when I reported this, said, an elaboration would be helpful. Please ask how Kun Su Jin determines the rightness or wrongness of the practice of others in such a general manner, especially since the statement relates to the practicing the teachings and the experiencing of tinnitus.
When it's hearing or sound, when it's right, it has to be with right understanding.
When it's no sound, mm-hmm. and it's imagined, and you say it's wrong practice,
in what case?
It is wrong practice. She says it's one of the manifestations of wrong practice.
Okay, it is the nimitta for those who have wrong practice.
So we have to understand clearly what is nimitta. Nimitta from memory,
right.
Or nimitta of reality.
From memory, I think.
It's not the only possible nimitta from wrong practice, right? Ajahn, there can be visual, audio.
Is that not wrong practice?
Yeah, yes, I'm saying the nimitta from wrong practice may be visual object
or sound,
or even experience of body, mm-hmm. or whatever. Any kind of imagining can be a result of wrong practice.
So his question is just how can you, because he would like me to just quote back exactly what Ajahn says, how do you determine what is right or wrong practice of others in such a general way as to say that when it is the imaginary nimitta of sound.
Let's talk what is right first, when there is understanding of that object. But when there's no understanding, it can be nimitta of the object or the imagining one.
People who have wrong practice can imagine they see other beings, for example, or are communicating with other beings, or any number of imaginings.
The what they refer to is not what happens in daily life, but happens only when it's associated with those particular practices.
When there's no right understanding, see?
That's why we can say it's the result of wrong practice.
Or some kind of hallucination or illusion, going to see the psychiatrist. To see the doctor, who knows?
Following of the imaginary, taking that for being real. And he also says there's no doubt that subjective tinnitus is the experience of inaudible sound, most of which are idiopathic in origin. The original question was, where does it fit into the Pali canon category of Paramatta Dharma, since there's no mention of it or similar conditions as well as other types of conventional knowledge. So actually the Paramatta Dharmas are involved are just hearing of sound or thinking of imaginary object. Like in a dream. And the reason that it doesn't particularly name certain diseases in the canon is because actually there are just a certain moha. Number of dharmas,
yes.
Just moha.
So, in the case of tinnitus, Ajahn, we can say that we don't know really what the cause is. It's possible that it's imagination, and it's also possible that there can be some rupas that producing sound?
We are talking about that which doesn't happen now. Mm-hmm. So there is so many idea about it. But if we talk about Paramadadhamma, then we can see that there are 6 doorways only to experience object.
I'm thinking about, like, when you hit your teeth against each other, you do get hearing. There is hearing of that. So tinnitus can be something like that?
When it's sound, it is heard, that's all.
The examples when actually no sound is heard, his question is, can we then say that thinking about the past memory and concept of a particular sound via the mind door is what is referred to as experiencing of tinnitus?
Can you talk to yourself?
Yes.
Talk to yourself.
And if this is correct, because this is someone who has this condition, if it's so, if one stops thinking about the past memory and concept of the particular sound or the conditioning states associated with this thinking, then will the inaudible sound cease? Yes, if there's no thinking about the inaudible sound, then no imagining of it. And in this, and so can this be considered as a diagnosis and treatment for this kind of tinnitus?
Normal.
Normal.
Not normal.
Depends whether it's normal or not normal. Normal you means when it's
like
just...
Now.
If it's not normal,
like now it's normal, yes. And he asks, what method is suggested to stop thinking about a past memory and concept of a particular sound via the mind door? And the only answer is understanding, I think.
And forget about that.
Vietnam one time, and a couple of the monks had all sorts of long stories about particular kinds of experiences and sounds and visible objects that had been experienced following their meditation practices, and we said just forget all about it, stop paying attention to it. It's a bit like also someone who imagines people and different things, schizophrenic. One has to just stop paying attention to those illusions.
Are there any questions that came up when you went to Nakhon Nayok? When you went to Nakhon Nayok, that you might remember that are interesting to discuss, because it either some kind of an understanding of it, not at the, you know, a conventional understanding of it, didn't occur, or what? Is there some topic that you remember from that trip?
About conceit.
Got conceit.
Yeah. Because when I was angry about some of the list of all the blessed sins about Ajahn.
So I was... It was explained to me that is really conceit. Because I think of me and him, and there is the clinging to the importance of self, of what I think, and it is my problem. That's I found such a good reminder, that all those things are not the other person's problem, but my problem, you know?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's very good, Brenda.
Yeah. And also, I found very helpful when we often say here, trying to work things out for yourself, that is thinking, is it pariyatti or is it patipatti, or when it is the level of Pariyatti is already direct awareness of characteristics or not yet, and we may be wondering, you know, and also at such moments there is clinging to your own thinking and ideas. So and that is what I think is so helpful, to be a reminder of one's own kilesa. And that one, this morning I said also that we need a kalyana mitta, because when we just read the books or the suttas, we don't find out all those things so much as when we hear it directly from the kalyana mitta, who knows, who understands, you know, it makes a big difference. Yes. So first I thought I'd come here once a year, but now I think I should come twice a year.
How many more?
I understand that even the word Pariyatti can only truly be understood when there's understanding about realities. But in the meantime, there's also sometimes a need to explain. So sometimes we need to hear explanations, although there's no enough understanding, but sometimes we need to hear some explanations also.
That's why Buddha taught for 45 years.
But the people he was explaining to had quite advanced level of understanding. So
otherwise it's wrong.
Yes.
Yeah.
So for us, right, you're saying that
yeah.
we need a level of detail that doesn't appear in the suttas.
Talking about detail, unless Tadao is ready to ask his question, I have a detailed one.
Needs another swig of coffee first.
No, I'll be quiet.
This is about the two meanings of nama. So nama, as we know, like nama and rupa, so seeing is nama, hearing is nama, feeling is nama, as opposed to rupa, which doesn't experience anything at all, such as visible object. And nama also refers to name. So Nina is a name and Jonathan is a name. Visible object is a name for that rupa. Okay. And this is actually from one of your books. The commentary to the Abhidhammata Sangaha, the Abhidhammata Vibhavani, gives an explanation of Paramatta Dhammas, Samuti Dhammas and Panyati Dhammas. This subject pertains to daily life. It's deep in meaning and it should be correctly understood. Names can be given because there's the reality of sound. Sound forms up names, in Pali, nama. So we hear a name like Suchin, and it's because of the sound there is a name. This word nama does not refer to nama dhamma, the reality that experiences. A name bends towards, conveys the meaning of things. Namati in Pali means to bend, incline towards. Okay, I just pause and ask a first question. We also hear about nibbana as the nama that the experience bends towards. So it seems that with regard to nama, bends towards, namati, can refer to, like here, the conventional name. And also it can refer to the characteristic of nama, like nibbana, bending towards it. A name bends towards, conveys the meanings of things. Namati in Pali means to bend, incline towards. According to the sub-commentary, there are two kinds of name. A name which is suitable to convey a meaning, and a name which is used because of preference. About what do we speak in daily life? Why do we speak? We speak in order that someone else will understand the subject we refer to. Now, Sadarupa, the sound, functions then as name, nama. It bends towards, conveys the meaning of the different subjects we want to make known. So, like now, when I'm speaking about a particular sounds are heard, particular sounds are given, and the sounds are the names making the subjects known. And just as a by note, when it is, because we discussed when it is Niruti Patisambhita, then it is the direct understanding of that sound, of the meaning. So if the word Vijnana or Vedana is given, there's direct understanding of the reality. And so I think it's always understanding of the sound, of the meaning of that sound that is meant. Is that correct? We speak in order that someone else will understand the subject we refer to. Thus, Sadarupa functions as the name, nama bends towards, conveys the meaning of the different subjects we want to make known. The fact that someone else understands the meaning of what we say and the subjects we speak about depends on the words we use to convey the meaning. It depends on the language we choose to express ourselves. The Abhidhammata Vibhavani deals with several other aspects concerning different kinds of names. It distinguishes between four kinds of names: names which are generally agreed upon, samanya nama, such as sky, rain, wind, or rice; names denoting a special quality, guna nama, such as arahata sama sambuddho. Someone who does not have the special qualities of a Buddha cannot have this name. Then there are names denoting activity, kriya nama, and names that are given according to one's liking. The Dhamma is very intricate and detailed. We should study all realities that the Buddha realized at his enlightenment and taught to others. He wanted people to understand the true nature of realities which appear. That's the introduction. That is a quote. Actually, it is from Concepts and Realities. It's actually from Survey, but it's the quote itself is from Abhidhamma Vibhavani, the commentary to the Abhidhammata Sangaha. Now, I have a quote which someone, our friend Lewis, gave on the list from the Atasalani on this topic, which I find difficult to follow. I have the Pali, but I just read the English. In the couplet of name and form, nama rupa, name has the sense of name making and bending, namana.
Why not nama?
Well, it should be nama. Yeah, this is just a translation. So name is misleading here. So nama has the sense of name making or bending, namana, of causing to bend, namana. So before we had the bending of nama when meant as name, now it is the bending of nama, the Paramatta Dhamma, because it's talking about nama rupa. Four of the khandhas are nama in the sense of name making. Well, when it says name making, nama making, it means what is the actually
it cannot make anything.
Nama karana
is the verb action.
The action.
Bending.
Yeah. So it actually should be four of the khandhas are nama. In the sense of nama karana, in the sense of bending.
Right.
Bending. Okay. Yeah. For whereas from being named by the people, the name of King Mahasamata was Mahasamata, and whereas parents by acclamation make a name for their son, let him be called Tisapusa. And whereas the name comes in virtue of a quality as preacher, Vinaya, student, such names as feeling come quite otherwise. So in the same text, so before it was talking about nama, the reality, but then it goes on to talking about the conventional meaning of naming, being named by people, and such names as feeling come quite otherwise because it's from the reality. Feeling and other elements of consciousness, like the great earth and other elements, and then it has make their own name as they arise, nama karantava, but it's the same thing. When it says make their own name as they arise, it just means that because they are reality, it leads, they have a particular name. I think that's all it means. When they arise, their name also arises. This is what the friend was saying. So what does it mean when it says, and in the Pali, upanesu, which means to arise. So it's saying when they arise, like when Vedana and Rupas and other dharmas arise, and the Pali also has their name, nama upana meva, their name also arises. What does that mean?
Only when they're thinking about it.
So what it means is when it says when they arise, their name arises, it means when there is the dharma, the thinking arises, not
like
the name.
Some people would call lobha now, see?
Right.
Lobha is that the word lobha comes immediately.
But according to the description, it's well before, it's not just referring to the label, because the word lobha takes many, many moments of thinking, but it's saying that as soon as Vedana arises, the name arises. So it's talking about immediately.
When one is used to name it. Otherwise, they're still thinking about it.
So if one is, when lobha arises, if one's used to think about lobha, then instantly, as soon as there is lobha, there's thinking of the word lobha. Or
but it's saying when it arises, that no, time.
When
it
I know.
But I think a conventional
upane,
way.
Nama, upane, upana, meva. There's also immediately.
Conventional.
For no one, when feeling arises, Vedana, upana, says, no one says, be called feeling. There is no function of name-taking, nama, gahanikicha.
You see that before there is the understanding of Paramada Dhamma, there's always name for realities.
It's like one has to hear about it first before one is able to identify it as a particular kind of Dhamma.
I think it's more like even when there's no understanding of, say, lobha, one still has a name for it, of attachment, or even if it's no understanding.
Wouldn't it be more, I mean, it's easier for me to accept if the name here refers to the thinking process, because thinking follows immediately. So not necessarily to think in terms of words, but thinking happens soon after Vedana, and then there's followed by thinking or lobha, followed by
before
thinking
word.
Before word. So could not that in here it
but
refer
to but we're talking
to
about name now.
Immediately giving it a name, but I think it's, as Nina said, it's conventionally, instantly there's a name given. It's not talking about, oh, it's so many processes of mind or cheetahs. It's just saying instantly there is that idea of name. And when the earth appears,
can it be now?
But also a chant, it happens that
yeah, like
we're lost.
As soon as Kunsukin, see, the name comes.
Sometimes we don't remember, and yet
no,
we think.
No, Kunsara, Kunsukin, all names.
We don't remember.
We often get the names mixed
up. Yeah, not thinking about reality at all.
Yeah.
and then in the next one it says, when the earth, patui, appears, there's no function of naming, be thou called earth. It just means that there's earth and then instantly an idea of earth, no thinking about, oh, I should call it earth. It's just immediately there's the thinking about that name. And when the earth appears, there's no function of name-taking, be thou called earth. And similarly with the world systems, with Mount Meru, the moon, sun, stars, the name is just as it arises, answering to the spontaneously arising concept. So it just means thinking instantly about the name.
It depends on times, too. Sometimes we don't name anything at all, but sometimes we just kun sukin or kun el.
And babies don't name.
Not yet.
So when it arises, the name feeling just arises, answering to the spontaneously arising concept. This happened because we were saying that concepts don't arise, only paramatta dhammas arise. And so the friend quoted this from the Atasalani. Oh, you see, concepts arising. But it means there's instantly thinking about the concept.
The answer,
yeah. And also, when you were reading about bending namati, I was thinking about how associated with the concept, the mind is always bending towards the object, always. So, when we communicate the concept, to whoever, that also is chitta, bending towards the object all the time.
Nirvana, the reality that dhammas bend, Lokuttara dhammas bend towards. Can one say also concepts or names that realities bend towards when there's thinking about
it
concepts?
It means chitta can experience anything. The experiencing is just like bending toward.
And so is perception, the mental activities, so is consciousness. But nirvana, though it be for all time, is always nirvana. Such is name in the sense of name making. So it just means that it's always the word, the name of nirvana for that dharma. The four aggregates, the four khandhas are name, are nama in the sense of bending, for they bend towards the object. In the sense of causing to bend, all of these are nama. But the four khandhas cause one another to bend onto the object, because they condition each other to bend onto the object. And nibbana bends faultless states onto itself by means of the causal relation of the dominance of that object.
Where is this one from?
That was from the Atasalani.
Yeah. Which translation were you reading?
I was reading from the Pali Text Society translation. I have the Pali here as well, but I'm trying to keep it short.
And what's Pali word for bending?
Namati.
Nama. Bending.
Bending. No, it's
a, oh, bend.
Okay, no.
But in Pali, what's the word for bend? Nama bends, right?
Namati. Namati.
Namati.
Namati.
Namati.
Namati. Yes, namati.
Namati.
T-T-I.
It's a intransitive. If it's transitive, it's namati.
It's good that one can understand reality rather than understand the words.
Yeah. Cause one another to bend, namenti.
But
But at the same time, we don't know what each person has accumulated. Sometimes thinking a particular way about something can be a condition.
Yeah, not I, oh.
Yeah.
Can I just express my opinion on that commentary, passage from commentary? I think it's very strange because it's play with and just play, word play with a nameti. And nama is a sort of word, yeah? And in fact, in Buddha's time or in ancient time, there were no letters. So it's only sounds, yeah? A sequence of sounds could convey meanings, yeah? And then, you know, understanding means could be could refer to realities or non-realities. Yeah, yeah. That's the point. And then this commentary is going on saying that nameti is sort of playing with the just word nameti. It's sort of bending towards realities. Yeah, is what this is trying to say. Yeah, but bending towards reality has to be based on the understanding of the meanings, meaning that there should be clear understanding that there are two types of meaning, one referred to non-reality and the other referred to realities. So if we do not miss that point, this doesn't make much sense to me, at least.
That's why I gave the introduction from the commentary to the Abhidhammata Sangha first, because one has to understand that there are these two meanings of nama, and that names can be of paramattha dhammas, yeah, or of concepts, and that there's bending towards reality or to concept, and but always it's namas that
because
bend towards
nama itself, or nama themselves do not bend towards our understanding or bend towards seeing the reality as they are.
Is well, I think you could say that namas bend towards the object in the sense of experience. It just means experience the object. So it's a way to, it's just a way of explaining that objects are experienced by namas and nibbana, because people have other ideas. So it, why is it classified as a nama? Because it is that which other lakutara dharmas bend towards. So it's just...
Is it bend towards where?
Bend towards nibbana. It is the reality, because of being such a powerful object, conditions the lakutara dharmas to bend towards it.
Lakutara dharma bend towards
nibbana. Yes, the magga and pala cittas bend towards nibbana.
What is lakutara dharma?
In this case, magga and pala cittas.
Magga and pala cittas bend towards magga
and magga and pala cittas bend towards nibbana.
Nibbana is an object.
Okay.
So nibbana conditions those dharmas to bend towards it because it's such a powerful object.
Nibbana conditions
those dharmas to bend towards it.
And then magga and pala cittas bend towards
nibbana.
Nibbana.
So it's actually just
showing the conditioned nature of realities and how nibbana is experienced and why the lakutara cittas experience it. So it, all of this is actually just showing the conditioned nature of realities, why there is a sound, why when you hear a sound of table, there's thinking about table. So it's actually just talking about conditions and paramattha dhamma.
At the same time, it is wordplay, but that's how they remembered things. Mm-hmm. So it's not to be taken literally or too literally. It's a way of remembering.
Nameti means cause to bend. So nameti in this is used for nibbana because it's the causative, causing the... Namati just means... bends towards, but nameti or namenti is a causative, which means it causes to bend. That's why it's nameti, namenti.
In Pali, it's hard to say it's causative, because in the case of namati, bend towards blah, 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 that blah, blah, blah is not object.
bend towards, like cheetah bends towards visible object, so namati, so it bends towards the object, but nameti causes to bend, so that's why nameti is used with nibbana, because it's always in the sense, nibbana doesn't bend towards, it's always caused to bend.
But can visible object be nameti too?
Nameti, it causes, but nameti, visible object
if
causes
we talk
seeing.
About object, we can use the word nameti, but if we talk about the nama,
it causes to bend towards, yes, because
but it doesn't explain it that way, does it? It's just nameti is particularly in the case of nibbana.
But what does it mean?
Yeah,
it caused the citta, cittasika, to bend towards
it. Yeah,
and what about the visible object?
Yeah, it causes seeing to experience.
Namas, so they don't have an explanation.
Right.
Because it's just talking about namas. Nibbana is the only nama that is used in this sense of causing.
There must be some difference.
I think the difference is that in the one, it's between conditioned dhammas. If visible object is also a condition, it's conditioned, it has a conditioning, one is a pachaya and the other is a patayuban, and both are arising and falling away, whereas nibbana is not a conditioned dhamma, it's not a conditioned reality, it's unconditioned. And while magga and phala are conditioned and it has chetasikas conditioning each other, nibbana does not have that particular relationship. So similarly with visible object and sound, they're conditioned and conditioning. But you can't say that about nibbana.
Is that having
good explanation? Because nibbana is not conditioned from other object, so the other object is just there, no matter the citta bend or turn toward it or not. But for nibbana is special because it's not like the other conditioned reality, so it conditioned or caused the citta to bend towards it because of panya. If there is no panya, nothing can
be experienced.
Yeah. Even two words, different meaning. Yeah.
Topic came up in the first place because of the quotes referring to the arising of concepts. That was what was the controversial topic and the part that was. But also, it's quite, one has to read it very carefully because it's using nama as in nama rupa, nama as name, kind of even in the same sentences. So one has to read very carefully. Discussion. I was talking to one or two friends, not in a personal way, but from a Dhamma point of view, about the topic of complaining, because we all complain about things sometimes, like in the hotel, the meat is too tough, and then sometimes we think we should report it, but sometimes better to keep quiet, and of course it depends on the cheetah. But I remember one time on a trip in India where something wasn't right and I was going to, I was a bit nervous of the driving and I was going to say something to the driver, but I kept quiet. And afterwards you asked me if I said anything and I said, oh no, I kept quiet. And you said, better, because maybe one has some dosa, but if one keeps quiet and doesn't voice it out, it's more appropriate or more considerate. But some people may think that, may also say that complaining is their habit or their accumulation, so it can't be helped, but this may be an excuse also. Do you have any comments on the topic?
I think about the patience parami.
Talking to a friend in a discussion when they were talking about some problems, and you were talking about how you reflect on the bhikkhus in the Buddha's time who lived in very difficult circumstances or in the forest and put up with any kind
of
thing.
And when you are friendly, things are different. You can understand, have sympathy and every wholesome thoughts.
When there is more sympathy and patience and metta, less conditions to, even if one has some thought of annoyance or thinks something is not right, then one keeps quiet
all
or out of consideration.
On right understanding.
Patience with kusala, of course, but if one is just biting one's tongue, there's no kusala. So there's no rule, I think, about whether to speak out or not.
And sometimes people may think, or we may think, that it's good to say something, like the other day when Nina's food wasn't right, she may think that the hotel should know that it's not cooked well, or like in the example Betty gave, she may think someone should know that the bungalow is not right or something like this. So
it depends on citta at
on
that moment.
Whether it's out of consideration or...
To be friendly or not. To have metta in other sense.
For sure, if it's thinking about oneself and one's own comfort, there's no metta at that time.
And thinking about that which is not manifested much more than it is, manifested.
That which is not manifested.
It's much more.
Yes. Tendency and the habit.
Yeah.
And also I think that understanding more about realities, like only visible object that's seen, only hardness that's touched, only taste for a moment, then it's also a condition for more patience because one is less disturbed by
and
what is experienced.
Actually, there's no right understanding of reality right then.
Right, when one's complaining. Or
but no one can stop it. Only Panya will do by time.
So for some people it is their nature to speak out rather than keep silent.
I think also it's a little bit like the example we discussed before about how someone may always arrive late at work or something, and they may say, oh well, it's my nature or my habit, but actually it can be just like an excuse.
Otherwise Buddha wouldn't talk about the 10 paramis. For whom? For anyone who sees the benefit of parami.
Without a lot of patience developed, understanding cannot develop. It has to be with patience and metta. Any other comments, anyone?
Because you see that anything happened by many conditions, like karma, too.
Ajahn, I still cannot understand the relationship or co-relationship between sati and panya and 10 paramis. Somehow you said that they are almost the same thing, or development of sati, panya is tantamount to development of ten paramis. Still, I cannot get real feeling of that they are sort of almost the same thing.
What is wholesome and what is unwholesome? Panya can see that. So at any moment of whatever it is, akusla, panya sees it shouldn't have more and more and more as usual. But there are no way to get rid of it, only right understanding. That's why we learn to understand that all realities are anatta, but not an excuse. But they really understand reality right now.
And where does this idea of ten parami come in?
This is panya parami. And whenever there is the understanding that it needs or it takes time to really understand and follow the teachings, it is Kanti Parami and Virya Parami and Satya Parami and Adhidhana Parami.
So in a sense, Panya is the forerunner of all the rest of the paramis.
Without Panya, no matter it's Dana or Sila, it cannot be Parami.
Also, when Panya is running, as a foreigner, then other things will follow.
Right.
It's not just Panya running by himself.
Mm-hmm. And without patience, Panya cannot grow.
So if one develops as a Panya, the other things will follow. It's
right.
Not like, I have to develop metta, I have to develop patience, or something like that.
It's there.
It's not understanding, because that would be the idea of I can do something I should do something.
In other words, it's impossible to develop under ten parami without developing panya, and also it's impossible to develop panya
without parami.
Yeah, so they necessarily co-occur or follow the development of panya.
Talking about patience, if there isn't patience with what is conditioned at this very moment, then panya cannot develop.
It's not just ordinary patience, it's patience with understanding. Because people talk about patience or other things. Yeah. About
and even when, like in this example of the complaining and no patience, actually it's patience with what is conditioned at this very moment. Because so it's that's why understanding leads to more patience, more metta, and less conditions for minding or complaining or wishing that reality was somehow different.
And forgetting more about oneself.
So, Chan, patience is virya.
Kanti.
Kanti. So, when it's normal kusala without panya, it's not patience.
It is, but not the way leading to the eradication of kilesa. All by conditions. No need to think about I will, I do.
Question to Sarah.
Yes.
If somebody asks you, or if somebody asks you, if somebody said to you, said that you are following Konsuchin, yeah? And then Konsuchin talks about development of Panya, and then and the first stage of Jnana is Nama Rupa Paricheda Jnana. Yeah? Then what would be your answer to that person, what these things are? If somebody asks, what is Nama Rupa Paricheda Jnana, and how Konsuchin explained and that to you, what would be your answer?
My first answer would be, I'm not following Ajahn Suchin. My answer would be, I'm following the Buddha's teachings, which Ajahn and other friends helped me to understand, but it's also what I find when reading in the text. So I don't say I'm following Ajahn. I say I'm following the Buddha's teachings. And in the Buddha's teachings, it talks about development of understanding everywhere throughout the teachings, in each sutta, or like in the Atthasamani, or anywhere else. And so through the development of understanding, beginning with this moment, and the teachings talk about seeing visible object, I sense different realities that are anatta, and that understanding has to begin now, has to begin to understand very clearly the distinction between seeing now and what is seen now, never mind what name is given to it. And only through clearly understanding the Dharma's now at this moment as anatta can the understanding develop until it reaches stages of vipassana jnana. But if there's no understanding now of what seeing is or what is seen now, quite useless to talk about vipassana jnanas or enlightenment or other attainments. So I would come back and say, okay, so what is, this is what we say on the list all the time, so what is real now, what appears now? And it's not Ajahn's teaching. Like often in Vietnam, people will talk about Ajahn's teaching. The monk teaches this and Ajahn's teaching says, no, it's not Ajahn's teaching. Because like we discussed last week about the distinction between good friend and teacher, the Buddha is the excellent teacher. Ajahn is our very good friend who points or directs us to the teachings. But if we think of being an Ajahn follower, then it's just a condition for a lot of attachment and not for really considering and checking what the Buddha taught for ourselves. So everything, every word has to be tested and considered and questioned and proved and understood for oneself. Otherwise, it's just Ajahn's understanding, not our own understanding.
Okay, two questions. Why the Nama Rupa Paricheda Jnana is the first stage of jnana? And my second question is, what the benefit of attaining that jnana?
Because there has to be the understanding of reality as reality, Dharma as Dharma, Dharma as anatta, not I who experience, not a glass or a person who has experienced. There has to be the very clear understanding of Dharma as a reality in the beginning before there can be higher understanding, like understanding the arising and falling away of that Dharma, or the conditioned nature of the Dharma, or the unsatisfactoriness or fearfulness of that Dharma, or and so on. So from the very beginning, like even now, it has to be the clear understanding of Dharma as Dharma, not thing, not person. And why is this valuable, precious? For giving up the idea of self, to really understand reality as it is.
Thank you. The reason why I asked the question is that, of course, in my book there is a section on Konsuchin, and there is only one passage I haven't written yet. Other passages I read probably 1,000 times. Check, check, check. But I haven't written anything on Nama Rupa Paricheda Jnana. So it's the reason why. Thank you.
Because what I find for myself is everything that I hear from Jan, and then I read in the text, and everything is in conformity. But if it's not in conformity, then I wouldn't consider and listen and come back again and again. So, but the point is the Buddha's teachings and not this person's or that person. It's all about detachment, even attachment to one's wise friend or teacher. Yeah.
By then, one knows that it cannot be any other's word at all, except the Buddha's. And what's meant by nama, rupa, pariccheda, jnana?
Question to me?
Yes.
To me, it's like if we see something, doesn't matter what it is, we have to somehow see a component. And generally we take everything as I or me, but we have to somehow dissect, and then way to dissect in the absolute sense is seeing elements. And see, when we see elements, at least according after studying Dhamma, then we have to see the difference between Dhamma and Rupa. And then through our development of, though it's still our book knowledge, we should appreciate that, okay, it's the way to see things as they are. When we see these things, then we have less so clinging or less concept of self doing anything. Yeah?
Well, I don't think we study Dhamma in order to dissect objects and people into component things, because that is just a kind of thinking. And I think what the Buddha taught is the development of understanding of dhammas, because these are the things that are real in the ultimate sense. And I think it's through the development of that understanding that one comes to see that what we take for objects and things and people are just dhammas, and that's an idea. But that comes with the development of understanding. It's not something that we should be trying to see by dissecting objects.
No, you are too wise. People are not wise to that extent. We have to study. We have to have book knowledge. And based on our book knowledge, we started to see things as they are.
For example, how would you start to see?
And visual object. How, without sort of learning of Buddhism, I would never have had any idea of the meaning of seeing object, visual object. And
but visible object is one of the dhammas. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. It's by...
It doesn't come naturally. We have to hear.
Yes, we have to hear.
So, though you're saying by dissecting, you mean just, for example, say someone suggesting that seeing experiences visible object, that's already dissecting for you, or what? Because that I think.
At least we have the basic understanding what elements are.
The question, what do you think about the answer?
I think that if we just learn to understand the word, that is not enough. Mm-hmm. Because, for example, nama, rupa, pariccheda, jnana, we can understand that. But it has to be the developed panya to the degree that it is not just hearing and understanding the meaning of the words. It has to be a moment of understanding reality as it is, as one has heard before, exactly the same. For example, we talk about seeing. It's the reality which experiences an object, or anyone can understand that it sees. But it, no one knows. It, because it has no shape, no form, and it is now seeing. So the object, it's the, we always, one always pay attention to the object, but not to that which sees. So even talking about the reality which is seen is so very, very difficult to really understand it. It's not anyone at all. No thing in it, no one in it. It's only that which can impinge on the eye base, and it can condition seeing to arise to see it, that's all. See, so that which now experience, no matter seeing, hearing, thinking, feeling, whatever, are not known at all. That's why we learn to understand them one by one in order to begin to realize that there is no self, no one in anything. And that which now appears has a reason, just to be seen or heard and then no more, never to arise again. Even it's now, that is not jhana, because it's not enough. That's why before it can be nama rupa pariccheda jhana, it needs a lot of understanding reality when it appears. Like now, there's seeing, hearing, but it's not enough. The understanding, what one hear about it, is not enough to condition the understanding with sati and right understanding by nature, naturally. No one can condition anything to arise at all. That's why Kanti Bharami and Virya Bharami, Satya Bharami and Adhidhana Bharami is moment of listening, understanding. It bends toward more and more tendency to understand reality as not self. And it takes time, because Pariyatti is not Patipatti, but if Patipatti does not arise, who can really know the moment which is very natural, but understanding is there with sati. And sati is not like a bump of sati. It's only like any other reality which arises and falls away very shortly, but it's different from moment without sati. So one knows that without that moment, it's only intellectual understanding. And if one cling or wanting to have it by different means, that is a trap of lobha again and wrong view again. That is why it's so very difficult to go against the current of that which has accumulated the lobha, the ignorance and the wrong view. So it's a natural, as natural, no place, no special place, no special position, no special object.
Yeah, to me, like say concerning citta chetasika rupa, I have a sort of a conventional idea what rupa is, for instance, what seeing object is, or what sound is. Yeah. And also I have some idea of, lobha, dosa, and other chetasikas. Yeah. But citta doesn't seem appear at all.
Because you see that it is now arising and falling away. It sees. But it's difficult to see that it's not I. And its characteristic is just nama, no shape, no form, no place at all. Just arise to experience, that's all. So the experiencing at any moment is that which we call it citta.
By the time we take everything else for
I, the five khandhas.
So it's equally difficult.
Very, very difficult. Only the accumulation, right attention, right understanding, makes it rain. No one can do anything at all. By understanding this, it is the way to have less and less attachment and less ignorance of Dhamma, because it seems like we understand Dhamma. Everything is Dhamma. But when Dhamma arises, no understanding. But by more and more understanding literally or intellectually, it will be conditioned for right awareness. By conditions, at any time, it shows anattaness. No one can do anything. No one can select object for sati. No one cannot have special time for sati to arise. By conditions. That's why Panya understand deeper and more confident on conditions. Otherwise, there's no way to go against the current of ignorance and attachment to have the panya of that degree.
I do understand that everything is anatta and we cannot control sati and panya to arise. Yeah? I do understand that. So it means that we have to have tremendous amount of patience. Yeah.
Right.
However, at the result, yeah, I said that Buddhist teaching is like taking us to a theater and not enjoying the story, the movie, but pay attention to sound and light. And when I said that, so the simile, and then everybody laughed at me. I still do not understand why this simile is so wrong.
Sorry, I don't remember the particular occasion. So you said that when going to it's like going to a show but not enjoying the performance.
Yeah, don't pay attention to the movie or show. Just pay attention to sound and smell and these things.
Right, and that's supposed to be like what?
Why is this is wrong? If is this attitude is wrong, is what I'm asking.
Because you were giving that as a simile for what?
It's like at this moment, because at this moment, why?
I suppose. Well, I'm just guessing now, but I'm not saying the simile is wrong, but my comment on it would be this, that when there is awareness of a Dhamma, it's not because one is not paying attention to anything else. So whatever one is doing it. But because awareness is not self, it arises and it takes one Dhamma as, but one is still having a conversation and understanding the words that are spoken. So nothing that is happening in a conventional sense stops happening. The conventional world is still there, but there is some understanding of a Dhamma as a Dhamma at the same time.
Okay, we do this one. Yeah, we are talking about say when Buddha recognized Sariputta as Sariputta. Yeah, and then he has a non-stoppable series of sati and panya. Yeah, then how is it possible to mean that seeing reality as they are all the time, how is it possible to come up a sort of idea of somebody or a familiar person sitting here? That's something I couldn't understand. How can one somehow manage to see reality as they are at the same time see conventional truth as conventional truth?
Because the thinking that conceptualizes about a person continues, because it's the habit. But there's no mistaking the thinking or the concepts for realities.
And also you must remember that in the case of Buddha, he'd have developed a lot of kusala, you know, a lot of metta, karuna and everything. So it's not like Pandya will have to come in and then no opportunity for metta and karuna, you know. So when there's thinking, by accumulated tendency to metta, that will arise. And metta has to have concept as object.
Okay, so in our case, there's a thinking, but our thinking is motivated by ignorance, or it's rooted in ignorance. So we take concept as something true, which do exist.
Well, I wouldn't say we always take concepts for something that exists in the ultimate sense, because we know that most things are only of a limited duration. So, but let's say we conceptualize all the time. But I think, to my understanding, so does the enlightened being. But our conceptualizing is based on memory of the past conceptualizing, which has been accompanied by a lot of attachment and wrong view also. So this is where sanya plays a role. It colors the perception we have of the world, even if there's not necessarily wrong view arising, but still the recollection of the way the world is or things are is colored by past experience with of wrong view.
I think we forget all the time how very natural understanding and awareness has to be. So as soon as there's an idea of paying attention to sound or light or color or something, or an idea of not thinking about people, then it's not right, then it's wrong practice at those moments. Because when it is right understanding, it just comes in, slips in just very naturally, easily, whether watching the movie or reading the newspaper or sitting here chatting about this or that. It's not a matter of not doing this or not this or attending to this. So just any time. And now we think about people, but usually with attachment or irritation or ignorance, but more understanding means, as we were discussing earlier, more patience, more metta, less thinking about oneself and one's own wishes.
So going back to your original simile, one is still watching the performance and following the show, the story, but there's more understanding of, as in your simile, of the other things that you mentioned.
So can we... Probably you say no, but can we say that we live in the world of samuti-satcha, yeah? And we live in that world all the time, yeah? After we develop a sort of, say, if one attains certain level of enlightenment, yeah? One live in both so in the world of samuti-satcha and then paramata-satcha, and it's like a quantum physics. You live in the world of samuti-satcha and paramata-satcha. It goes like this.
Well, the person who's enlightened is not lost in the world of samuti-satcha. He lives quite comfortably in that world because he knows what's what. Otherwise, how could he live?
It's like a heaven. It's some of what is yellow. How is possible to
really know somebody such a... What's the difference between reaching out to hold the glass, seeing, thinking with attachment, ignorance, and seeing, understanding, thinking with understanding, and ending up lifting up a glass? There's no difference. Can I ask you a question? Just now, the part you were talking about, the thinking that is tainted by past wrong view. Sanya, yeah, you brought up Sanya, because I was thinking in terms of whether that was one way of saying that there is more Atta Sanya now, and when there's developed understanding, there's some Anatta Sanya that comes into play. The difference between the thinking of a Putujana is that there's more Atta Sanya in the thinking, whereas of an enlightened person there's Anatta Sanya.
Well, I suppose that would have to be so, because the enlightened person has no more wrong view. At all.
So the difference you're saying, our thinking now is tainted by past atta. Well, the enlightened person is still thinking, right, in concept. So the difference is that no anatta sanya, no atta sanya to influence the thinking.
But,
because still thinking in this about the same thing, like thinking about glass and all that, ours will be tainted with some atta sanya.
I'd actually like to hear Ajahn speak about this, but as I understand it, the sanya, which is marking all the objects, has also marked all the wrong view in the past.
Sam was saying, give an example of natural, which is a very good subject, I find. And you said, chatting about this and that, but then I find I get only absorbed in things, in different objects when we are just chatting with friends. So I like to hear more about it.
So, of course, most of the time there's no understanding at all, just, as you say, chatting, absorbed and having fun. But if there's wishing to understand or trying to make it, it's not. It's just more clinging. Yeah. But gradually, like now, from hearing and considering more about dharmas, then understanding begins to develop and arise any time unexpectedly, as we're always reminded, any time at all. No rule. It doesn't mean stop chatting or stop going to see movies. That's all me and wrong practice. And I think on the comment about the Atasanya, because as we know, even when there's no wrong view arising, but I think it's correct, it can taint the way of thinking. And
I found it interesting the way
you don't. And on Tadal's earlier point about Paramatta Dharmas and Samuti Satcha, I mean, actually, even if one has never heard the Buddha's teachings and there's just a lot of ignorance and attachment, actually still Paramatta Dharmas and Samuti Satcha. It's just that nothing is known about the Paramatta Dharmas, nothing is known about this distinction between Paramatta and Samuti at all, but still Paramatta Dharmas and Samuti Satcha, the only difference is that life carries on as normal, but there's more understanding of what is Paramatta Dharma and how what is taken for being real is actually just conventional truth. So life is just the same, but with more understanding.
Okay, so can we say that in the case of Arahat, there's a thinking and having, say, suppose that having concept as object, yeah? And he take thinking as thinking. He doesn't think more than that. It's just a thinking, and it's just object could be a concept, and that's it, nothing else.
Well, he doesn't take the thinking for anything other than thinking, because all wrong view has been eradicated. Yeah.
He thinks about Sariputta and has metta towards Sariputta. There's no thought for an instant that Sariputta actually exists, that there's anything other than citta, cetasika, and rupa.
Yeah,
even for Sotapanna.
Okay, so he thinks of Sariputta and he knows that it's just a thinking of Sariputta as a concept. And then he sees seeing a thing.
Hearing a spirit. Yeah. You still see that as possibly a problem in function, in daily life functioning? I mean, if anya arises very often to know the reality of the moment,
probably not.
So the reason why the arahat has to leave the home life and take up the homeless life, I think is nothing to do with any change in conceptualizing.
More compliment? It's nature.
It is nature, yeah. To live with other people of similar inclination and view.
And even when he thinks, like even the Sotapanna, we don't need even to talk about the Buddha, but when he thinks about Sariputta and or has metta to Sariputta or addresses Sariputta, no need to stop and say, oh, but it's only thinking, or it's just very natural. Just like now, but no misunderstanding at all.
Well, I think it's a bit like before we heard the Dhamma, we knew nothing about the different consciousness through the different doorways and the different objects that are experienced. Now that we've heard about that, we understand a little bit about it, but it doesn't affect the way we observe the world.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it's just a bit of clarity or definition that wasn't there before. So that's that, and then it's like that as understanding is developed further and further.
I got a wrong understanding from sort of. No, I never. I had to practice this sort of samnak vipassana, because you engage that kind of practice, yeah. Then there should, everything should be realities, nothing else.
Or wrong practice.
Yeah.
What about when it's not at the meditation center?
No, in my case, just ordinarily sort of living in samadhi, in the world of samadhi satya, with occasional sort of awareness that it's not everything.
Yes, Ajahn, even the people who are not Buddhist, they imagine about Buddhists that the way they look at the world is that they will become like they're not aware of things and their life becomes somewhat different. So,
why Buddhists? Well, why Buddhism?
Because of the particular set of ideas that come up only from Buddhism, such as being detached from the world and all that.
Not from the world.
But that's what they think.
Yeah. Because of not understanding what Buddhism is.
So I guess that the enlightenment is just the enlightenment. It's not like when there's some different world. And understanding of this moment, that in a sense, that's it.
Just like now, but with better understanding.
Can intention be one of path of the Eightfold Path? Can. Okay, now.
Why can't intention be one?
We cannot do anything with intention. If we were able to do that, we would have attained enlightenment by now. But no, it leads us to a wrong path.
Intention cannot be effective, the Eightfold Path.
So intend to have panya.
But intention is there
with all chittas.
It's so, not the condition for panya to develop.
Yeah, I know that as, but is there a particular reason why that particular chetasika cannot be a factor of the Eightfold Path?
I think it's the root cause of all the wrong path method practice.
good cause.
Intention is
it's
the wrong view which is the root cause, not intention.
Root cause, which causes one to have intention. Why idea that we can do something intentionally.
Wrong view.
As long as wrong view isn't eradicated yet, it's there, even just a little bit. So Panya sees that it's wrong.
Yeah,